Yeah, that makes sense.
Guillotine the flavor and put that back in the beautiful counter and then put it in a made of chipping or made of a frame with wood and metal screws. I got to put it in and then they do the rasp and rasp it up.
Is that how they
do imitation devil eggs?
I've seen that. So you did it just with a really coarse rasp.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you, one of those for?
Shoemakers, basically.
And who did you ever see that being done, Pearl? That rasping? So I've seen a lot of that paper with the fake dental edge. I wondered how it was created.
Well, so you used to do some occasionally. I didn't like to do it because I mean, it used to be almost anybody who could just put a label on that chunk of rasp.
Say, you know, it's really hard work, you mean?
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you just get fed up with it anyway, apparently.
Yeah.
I was a member of the guillotine, you know, I did a lot of rows with the foreman manager, you know, Sam Ace, and they cut it in paper, and it was out, when they cut it, it was out of square. They used to swear that was the guillotine wasn't level on the floor.
Oh.
I used to point out, I didn't make it damn much, you could stand on it, for the nose it wouldn't hold it, so you put the paper in the damper. If they use the, what do they used to call it, fence,
mm-hmm.
on the side. If you put the paper hard against the fence, it couldn't avoid being square. Like, it had to be like this.
Right.
They used to love to put it in the middle of the thing and not touch the fence. And they cut it off and of course that's all right, but when you turn it around and cut it all away,
and then you got the other angle for
it. You get it a lozenge shape, and they used to say the screw thing wasn't level on the floor.
I have some questions on here.
You've left it running?
No, it's off right at the moment, I think.
Oh, I can see the little red light blinking, that's all.
Yeah, I'll stop it. I just put it on pause when I set it down.
Tighten the belt.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's where the load was leashed. When you load the load, you loosen the belt, that's where the load was heavier. So it was like, sort of retro step, wasn't it?
Somebody built that thing wrong, huh?
Yeah,
oh my
goodness. 14 of these things.
Now, how many were washers, how many were breakers, and how many were beaters?
Well, the original, the handmade paper setup, and I'll forget about the pulp business that was coming out.
The
handmade paper setup, there was one breaker, two washers, and three beaters.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go in the breaker first. And they used to put bleach in it, assume it was a bleach load. It didn't have to be bleach. They put the bleach in it, and then run down in the bleach tanks and stand for so long.
Run down in the bleach tank.
In the bleach.
Yeah.
Cell. Then they drain the bleach water off, and the pulp was taken back up and put in the washers.
How does it move back up?
Put it in tubs, like a trolley on wheels, and went up a lift. There was a lift up sent to the mill.
I see.
Hand lift, you know, not hand, mechanical lift, but hand loaded into these things. And then it went into the washers, the two washers, and was washed for so long until usually test with litmus paper, whether they got rid of the bleach or not. And then from the, of course all the time it's, even in the breaker, it's breaking roughly, but in the washers, still breaking shorter, or beating shorter.
Did the because the washers had blades on them.
Yeah. Well, just the same.
And is there a bed plate in a washer?
Yeah, another breaker.
And are the bed plates exactly the same in all three machines, or were they different?
They're coarser on the breaker.
Meaning?
Coarser teeth skinner.
Further apart, or
just
flatter top?
Well, they were, imagine sawtooth-shaped ridges going right across the
mm-hmm.
Slightly at an angle, so that there's a scissor effect, the bar
right.
coming in on it. And I think the breakers had 12 of these over 7-inch width.
Yeah.
The washers would be about 14 or 15, and the beater would be about 20.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, that's not...
That's good enough. Did you have to replace those often?
Take them out and sharpen them.
Sharp.
And recut them. This was a milling machine that you ran along and cut the grooves
So was it a solid piece of bronze that just had these things milled out of them, or was it wood and metal?
It was a wooden block with a bronze block let into it, with bolts coming up through the bottom, the apprenticeship bolts on the end.
So you could take the whole thing off?
Took the whole tapered block out, and just to put that in the machine and run it back and forth and run the cutter in.
And why would you sharpen them?
Well, they're coming down, they're getting blunt, basically. It wasn't so much sharpness, and keep the grooves deep rather than actual sharpness.
And what was important in having the grooves deep, do you know?
Get sort of the bar sort of grip the material and beat it as it went under it.
I see.
As opposed to cutting.
Had it been a flat plate, but it would just sort of get swept under without...
Right.
Now, the front edge of the only thing we're doing.
Did the beater man always say, hey, it needs to be fixed, or who would tell you to fix it when it needed to be fixed?
Well, the beater man used to say it wanted to cut in, and my department used to do the cutting.
Yeah, but the beater man, like Sam, would come and he'd say to the tell the foreman that it needs to be fixed up or something like that?
Yeah, she said that, you know, number one is... taking a long time, you know, and it's
It would start taking too long to beat the pulp.
That's right, yeah. And they'd, usually the beater would take the thing out, but we would always put it back to make sure it was in level, and, you know, otherwise, you know, if it was put in carelessly and a bit of pulp on the end and it was cut, that would be no good, like, you know.
So I can see that the problem would be if the blades get too dull, then it takes too long to beat a batch, and so it gets overhydrated, and then it falls off the mold.
Yeah, this is a lot of one of those things, yeah. And
before you said that the pulp would fall off the mold, what did you do? You remember saying that, and do you know what you mean by that or not?
Well, give it a shot, a lump of it would sort of slide. You know, almost like snow on a roof when a bit of it slopped away, you know.
And so that for them, that meant the pulp wasn't beaten quite right.
Yeah, they used to call it wet.
Too wet.
Too wet.
What happens when they have a whole batch of that? They just have to make paper slower, or would they get rid of it? Do you remember?
I think what they used to do, basically, was dump a dryer one in it,
Into the stuff tank?
Yeah. And with it, because they knew the tanks were agitated, going all the time. They dump another lot in and
try to make it usable.
Rectify it like that. Yeah.
Do you ever remember them dumping a whole batch of pulp somewhere?
Yes. Often they used to.
What would they do with it all?
Dump it in the river.
The pulp?
Yes. That's no good. Down the river.
Now, how often? When they were making paper, or when they were just making pulp?
I don't think any pulp ever went like that. That don't work.
No way. I'm going to be.
It was when they were making paper. They had a batch of it. I mean, sometimes they get nylon in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this would be out. And that would...
So the whole beater load would just be sort of run down to the river?
Down into the river.
Oh, I don't think that would work today, would it? They'd probably complain about pollution.
It would have been... I mean, a few of these went, say, the first 12 months I was there, but after that, would have been
shot at dawn. Don't have to go
do
that long time.
Yeah.
Is that those pits you said you built?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was hard to get it up. Of course, there's always some fiber in it, don't know. I mean, we had vibrating filters taking this stuff out. And
would they just sort of... Would they ever take the pulp and sort of block it up and make it big square blocks and take it as a dump or something?
No, it was burned.
Oh, it was burned.
But it did come round that there were farmers who were taking blocks of stuff. They found that if it was added to the glass fibre in this fibreglass resin, epoxy resin business, that red pulp added tear strength to it, that's right, because the glass fibre can stand at terrific weights and pressures, but not shock strains. But if if some of this pulp was added to it, ice stuff in that, or you want all the ice stuff they added, they could collect, it to go with that.
Yeah.
In fact, latterly, they started making it for that.
You mean when they closed down paper making, when they were just making pulp, some of the pulp went for that purpose?
Yeah, when they It'll be sort of halfway out. So they're making paper and making pulp for the glass fiber industry.
Yeah.
Not glass fiber, it has epoxy fiber. It's glass fiber reinforced epoxy.
In Ireland. In the 30s, it was only in the 60s that the nylon came about. You see? It was either wool that had to be removed in the early time, cotton.
And did you ever work in
I never worked
in the rag house?
No. Well, I filled in occasionally later on, but I never actually worked there, not really worked there.
Was that a worse job than the ones you did? Worse than the working in off, taking paper off the roll and stuff?
Yeah.
No, why?
Well, it was dirty, wasn't it? Can you think of, I mean, rags?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, the French rags were disgusting.
And do those people get sick often, the rag women?
No. They went through something called the dusters. All the rags were sort of tipped into something called a duster, and, No, that was after it was cut. What was the other machine called then?
So let's see. For 63 pence, how did I get that? Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah.
And then how much did it... So you...
That's from 60.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how much... I assume that you got when you were working there before you went off to be a housekeeper.
Right.
And that compared to... was that low pay or was that high pay? Or is that pretty average? I mean, did
that was about average, yeah.
And did that pay for anything? Was that rent? Was that... I mean,
I lived with my mum, so...
Nothing.
I had paid her 10 shillings a week, and... I was expected to clothe myself and more or less. I don't say she didn't ever buy me things, because she did, but the money in those days, I mean, a farm labourer earned 32 and 6 pence a week, which was £1.12 and 6 to keep a family on in those days. The labourers at the mill earned about 35 shillings, and the paper makers, I don't know what they earned, not much over £2.
Well, 2 guineas.
Yeah. So you see, the wages were so very low everywhere.
Right.
Our young people, you can't realise, what things were. I mean, sandals, plimsolls, canvas shoes, in Woolworths, you've got a pair for 6 pence.
Yes.
Petals, woolen tuppence, a gallon.
One shilling and 2 pence.
That's 14 pence, which could be 6 pence maybe on this one.
And I mean, the gallon. Farmers and that, sold rabbits. And you've got 2 rabbits for 9 pence. You see? Well, now...
Then you could sell the same skin.
The whole thing was, now if you want a rabbit, it's about a pound.
Yeah.
£5. So different.
Some of the details of your job that would relate to hand paper making rather than machine paper making, that would be interesting. Is there anything that you can think of?
Oh, of course. That was the biggest job. A lot was keeping the vats running, the machinery on the vats. The vat had got the hogs, which was the agitator in the vat, the knotter, which was a denotter in fact, and the lifter, as they called it, used to bring some of the pulp from the vat back up through the knotter to keep it circulating. And all the bearings of these things were wooden bearings, lubricated by water. And then life was short, we had to continually replace them. We used to make them, and workshop. It made a beach. Probably these blocks, and then they stopped it. The belts slipped so much that the bearings had come together and they put a spectre of bearings in. The,
I'm going to take my shoes. Put it further on with my cable.
Whoa!
Well, a little messy. Not telling much.
The mold repairs was a fairly steady job as well.
Now, did you do some of that too, or did only the chippy really work on the mold repairs?
I think I used to do the bulk of it, because it was nearly all wire. Wire and metal, you know. See, we know the mold's got a copper strip around the edge.
Yeah.
Well, these boys, in flapping the deckle on this cookie, they used to cut this copper tape, and then the wires would start rising up. Then they'd have to go back and pack them back and put a piece of copper on and put it in place.
Now, what would you do when the holes got sort of wore out so the tack wouldn't hold? Just put in a bigger tack, or?
Well, plug it with a piece of deal, a piece of deal down the hole.
A piece of what?
Piece of wood, not a piece of soft wood.
Uh-huh.
Down in the hole and put it back in there.
Another small tack, yeah.
Yeah, put the same kind of tack in there.
I've looked for those little flat-headed tacks like they use those. Were you able to purchase those?
Yes. There were some people we used to deal with all this kind of stuff. One of the biggest metal workers in the country now. I think I'll name it in a minute.
That's all right. So you do. Did that take up a lot of your time? I mean, in a day, every day were you working on molds, do you think, or, nearly?
Yeah, I put an hour or so every day, and might be more. It taken it like with a lathe mold, the wire would break.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to pull the whole wire right out through, and thread a new one back through its place, and pass it down, and sew it, and put a couple of stitches in, or it would place out. And they used to knock the watermarks off it, and pieces of them, and you can make a piece of saw it in. Very tedious job at sawing, because you can't, sitting like a straight, you can't just put the wire through and pull it through, and if it couples and breaks, you've got to put it through and hold it on your bring it through like that sort of thing until it's down, and then hold it and come back again.
So that your thumb holding the thread and your needle are moving at the same thing.
Keep it straight, like that. If you let it go, it does a cockle, and the cockle will come through. And
I never thought of that. So that's sort of the trick, is just holding the loose end with your thumb until it gets nice and tight.
Yeah. And then, of course, the last set of molds we had, Amy's made for us, the watermarks were soldered on them. But they should supply the watermarks. They weren't wire and not the older marks, so they were a hollow, almost like a U-shaped.
A letter plate?
Very, very tiny, but the U would be full of solder, and put them on the mould, like you just sort of wiped it and put them on and warmed it up, and that was it, something. It was a lot easier to do that than sewing them on, really.
Yeah.
But they didn't seem to be so strong, they seemed to lose things. Whether that used to attack the solder, I really don't know.
Well, the alum was in the sizing, wasn't it? Not in the...
If you get out, they put sort of a bit of alum in the stuff, and they put soap and alum and all sorts in the actual paper making.
Oh, that's right. To make that was in the beater to make the paper a little harder so that when it sized it wouldn't just totally fall apart, a little less than water leaf.
There's a lot of things that, that like this that I wouldn't really know much about.
Right.
The size machines. These machines, they were steam heated. Size quite so deep. We had a 2-inch copper pipe which would go up one side and down the middle and round and up and back, and this was for steam to keep the stuff heated. And the pipes went into vessels in glass elbows. Just like ordinary, you know, domestic clothing now, you know, mostly it's 15mm and that, you just slip them in and solder and make a solder just the same as that. There was steam inside there. And these angles used to gradually become like pottery. Hard and brittle and fall to pieces. And this apparently was the something in the size of, because they used to put all sorts in that, they put in what's this stuff they use for preservative
formaldehyde?
That's like formaldehyde in it. And what other issue is that, but I expressed the opinion with the plumbing supplier that these things being brass, the zinc was being filled by them, and leaving just sintered copper, and they fell to bits. They rather really used to use the brush, of course you used to destroy the paper and everything on the side. And got them to make, to get us some of these elbows in pure copper. And this might be the
Did you notice many health problems in the mill?
Yes. You said health.
Health problem.
No, I don't remember.
How about you, Pearl? Do you remember people specifically having like work-related illnesses that like they talk about now in the paper mill?
No.
Pretty interesting, isn't it? It must have been a cleaner
the
thing.
The village of Harvard before, they had health problems in the woolen mill. There was a lot of tuberculosis in that village, but they blamed the working conditions, but I think it was the family
stock?
Yes.
Because nobody ever moved out of Harberton Ford?
No, they intermarried.
And you kept on getting new stock at the paper mill.
Yeah, they intermarried, and they had a whole lot of, whole families would sort of going away to Cotaltmore, a home, and dying there.
Mm.
But I think basically it was more the housing, if you know what I mean, rather than the factory.
I see.
That's my personal opinion. Everybody said it was with the woolen mill. They worked with the woolen mill.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But not in Tuckenhay, there wasn't any. That's great.
No.
Interesting. Did you socialize with the papermakers, or was it sort of...
Oh, yes.
They used to pretend in the mill that they were the first class, but we used to pull them down in the window.
They all, everybody socialized. It was, how do I put it? The village hall was built with people sort of, working together. That was in the late 20s, wasn't it?
So it was all a cooperative venture building the hall?
Yeah. Lots of Ashpoint and, joined in as well, but it was basically, the village people, all the paper makers, they formed a band, and they used to have hops, sixpenny hops, everybody paid sixpence.
To get in?
Yeah, to get in, and it was the local band. His mother played the musical instrument, and she could get away from the pub. That was his cousin played the piano, and it was sort of, they had concerts, and everybody sort of, there was much more.
You're either in the band or in the football team.
I would have put it more community.
Yeah.
There's no community life in the village now, because the mill's gone. But before that, it was sort of the chapel and the church, and the village all sort of, there was always a Christmas concert, and the kids all performed, and there was a dance, not every week, but every couple of weeks, and right on until the war, this went on,
Things really changed after the war?
Yeah. Went through the war, really. They still carried on. But after the war, things altered, you see.
Because so many men were lost, or...?
No, I think the cars came in.
Mm-hmm.
and people went to the outside the village for their entertainment. There was no need to stay in the village. There was cars and everybody went to cinema or theatre or painting or, you know.
You think that's why people worked in the mills? Because they lived there, so they didn't want to walk another extra mile to work somewhere else?
No, I think it was because there was work there.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't anything as much, you see.
Except for a farm laboring?
Yeah, that's what it, yeah.
Was papermaking, even if you were in a job like the finishing area, considered better than farm labor?
Oh, yeah. Slightly better paid. And you were in the dry. The farm labor,
okay.
You were out in the wet.
Yeah.
Didn't matter what there was no adequate, but as there is now, rainwear.
Yeah.
I mean, a good raincoat was beyond the cost of the price that the average farm labor could pay. So he had a sack on his shoulders to keep him dry.
How did papermakers stay dry in the wet jobs?
Well, it went on the foot, but not overhead, wasn't it?
Did he wear wooden clogs?
No. Hobnail boots. And I mean, if they got wet coming to work, they could take their wet coats up to the drying loft and hang them up. So they had dry clothes to go home in, where a farm worker was wet all day long, and if he went home, he only had the fire to dry his sacks or old coats or whatever he was wearing by the fire.
Now, didn't you sort of think that you were lucky to work in the sizing room or something in the winter when it was nice and warm?
No. It was too boring.
It's human nature, never.
Human nature never be satisfied.
Yeah. I like babies and a chance to go work and look after babies was more my idea of a good life.
How about some of your sisters? Your family? Did any of them work?
She worked in it. Yeah.
She worked her whole life, or
up till she married? Yes.
What did she do? Work. A lot of different jobs or one special job?
Yeah, she went around the job. I have already moved on, yeah.
Your family, did other members of your family work in the mill?
Auntie Rose.
Before she was a girl, apparently.
Two aunts worked there all their working lives, more or less.
And what did they do?
They were sorters, both of them.
And an uncle worked in the stoker.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
No, I had a brother and a sister, but then none of them worked in the mill.
Neither your brother or sister did?
No. Brother went off the fence as a builder. And my sister.
Once she got married, then what? Took her home?
Yeah.
That's what happened with your sisters both worked in the mill.
Yeah.
So were there women that worked in the mill rather than taking care of a home? That I guess.
No, one did, yes. So my mum worked in the mill.
So
even, how do I put it, during the Depression, when most of them were on short time, my mum was a parter, which was parting the paper that went through the size machine before it was hung. It was put through two sheets at a time, and this had to be parted, let the air go through it, and then it was hung.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked at that.
And did she work 8-hour days?
No, slightly less than that.
There'd be more than one parter?
There were four. Four, there was a team of four, a couple of them were on short time during the Depression, but
what's short time mean? I don't know. What's short time mean?
It was working 3 days a week and on the dole for 3 days a week.
Oh.
Which meant they had to walk into Totnes.
To collect the money, you mean?
Collect the money.
Did you collect it daily or did you collect
Fridays they collected their 3 days dole. The men as well, they were all papermakers and all were
during the Depression.
Yeah. 3-day weeks. And then it went to 3- and 4-day weeks when it got a bit better. But mother was lucky, well, lucky. The parter still sort of kept, she was one that was kept going. It was sort of not always appreciated by some, but she was a good workwoman who never ever mucked up any of the papers, so they kept on the better ones. Her and old Bessie, they never sort of really had much, the occasional time they were. But mostly they didn't.
What would be the big problems that they do? Mucking up the work, what?
Well, can you imagine sheets of sticky size?
Right.
You know what size?
Yeah, I've seen the parting being done, so you can just tell me what the problems that occurred are.
And if they put a sheet down that had a slight, a slight wrinkle, not necessarily a tear at all, but if you put another sheet on the top, there'd be that wrinkle, and that would mark sheets top and bottom.
Right.
If they were in a hurry and they didn't push out that slight wrinkle there, there'd be half a dozen sheets perhaps ruined with just one wrinkle. Not necessarily tear the paper, because they learned very quickly not to tear the ends off. But then again, if they were a bit clumsy with turning up the edge to part them, they could make a line on that.
Because the turn-up's like shuffling a deck of cards almost.
That's
you sort
right,
of flip
yeah,
it around.
Flip it up. To be able to separate the two sticky sheets. And it had to go, you didn't just pick it up and put it over. It had to swing so the air became, you didn't pick up one sheet at a time.
What'd you do?
You picked up two sheets, this one stuck together there and the next one. So you put those two together to swing over.
The two that aren't really stuck together.
That's right. That's how they parted it.
Oh, I see. So you start by taking off one and then you always get the two that aren't stuck together.
Right. Yeah.
Now, at this point, was it important to make sure the watermarks were all aligned?
No, they didn't seem to have anything about watermarks to worry about, really. Because very often the watermark was only a small watermark, you know.
Yeah. But I remember somebody else telling me it was really important to keep them always the same always the same orientation.
Oh, yes. You didn't have to turn the sheets over, you know. You couldn't pick up one and flip it over.
You had to keep them all the same.
You keep them all as they were made, sort of thing. But nobody ever seemed to bother about that. It was just making sure it was in a tidy quad, as they called it.
So nobody inspected to make sure that they... How big was a wad? Just
it was like a ring, really. It was measured in the size house. They was given a sort of little wooden measure that was some were 3 inches, and if it was light thin paper, it was 4.5 inches, and this was a wad.
Yeah, remember the first time I heard that term, Harry Glanville was talking about it. He called them a lump too, I guess. Or maybe when he was making paper, he called it a lump, and I'd always thought they called it a post. But
yeah, well, it was post. We always called it a post, and I mean, so many posts went into the press, like, you know, and then it was all sort of dried on the machine, and then it was in a pile and went into the size house, and then it was measured with this little.
Yeah. So the terms that you think are interchangeable, wad and lump and post, I mean...
No, post was for the waterleaf paper, you know, before it was, and the wads were after it was sized.
So the waterleaf paper after it came out of the drying loft or before it went into the drying loft? For the term post?
Well, once it had been dried, it was in a pile.
Uh-huh.
So it was finished then in post.
Let me just back up. Make sure I got everything clear. This is don't get confused, Peter.
Sorry.
It's okay. No, I was thinking, the paper's made, and it's taken to the drying lofts, and it was hung over lines, right? Except for later when they got the machine. But when you were a child, was it taken up and hung over lines, or was it always just run through a cylinder drying machine?
Two different drying. It came up from the bathhouse,
yeah.
The post, and were pressed. Just ordinary pressed.
Wait, okay. So, once the layer had finished laying, it's a big wet stack, and was it a perfectly square stack at that point?
Yeah. If it wasn't, the layer was in trouble. It was put on a zinc plate and taken...
And how much paper at a time? One ream? One post?
One post at a time, and then another post was put on the top one. And then the day's making was taken up to the drying floor.
Okay. You left it one thing for
it. What do you think?
Well, after the layer laid it, it was pressed.
Oh, yes, for the water to come out. Right. In the bathhouse.
Okay,
yes.
And how long was... And that was a short time or a long time?
Well, just pop the pressure and down.
So all the wet sheets all together?
Yeah.
And they just sort of press it?
Press them... Pressure to go up to a
ton. No. When the felts were in it. Before the layer had it come off of it.
Yeah.
But no,
he's gone.
I know, but I think that that's true, though. After they're all stacked together, aren't they just left to weep and just under light pressure,
yeah,
very slow?
No more pressing in the bathhouse.
Okay.
It went upstairs.
Yeah.
To the press room, they called it, which was next door to the dryer. There it was pressed lightly.
Right.
And then it went into the dryer over the machine.
How long was it pressed lightly?
I couldn't tell you that. But it wasn't pressed
right.
Hard. They brought the pressure.
Those were the screw presses, right?
Yeah. The pole. They pushed the pole around.
Oh. You mean the bar in the middle of the house and all the guys pushing against the rope?
Yeah, well, just the two.
The
two guys
against the wall, so you have to use the poles on the road.
Right, okay. Now,
the dry workers would press it.
Those were men?
Yes, and they'd stay there overnight. Then it would be put on a truck and taken into the dryer.
Which is a cylinder dryer.
Which was a cylinder dryer.
And who would feed the dryer, women or men?
Women.
Mostly?
Yeah, that was quite a pleasant job.
And
you took it two sheets at a time, off the...
And they weren't stuck together too much?
No, they were just wet, you know.
But they'd sort of stick together.
But if you put through one, it would over-dry.
Mm-hmm.
If you put through three, it wouldn't dry properly.
Right.
Because the machine was set to dry two sheets of paper. And they was altered the heat of... For the thickness of the paper, if it was thick paper...
The numbers going through varied, some of the big elephant stuff, and that went through single anyway.
But that usually went through the small, single.
Now, when these papers were fed through, was it four across, maybe, or something like that?
Mm.
Yeah.
If it was capped, it would be six across.
Okay, and when it came out the backside, were the two sheets stuck together and they had to be peeled apart?
They were stuck together, and they were... You didn't... Peel them apart.
You left
you
them stuck
together. Then they went up.
And was it important to make that pile very neat, like always, or and
because the edges get knocked out, you see.
Oh, okay.
You see what I mean?
The corner would get folded over.
Yeah. You made it, laid it as neat as possible.
And did you have a little guide, like a guide to feed it into, or was it all just done by eye? Do you remember?
All done by eye.
Okay.
But
the only place it was a guide was when it was going in the room.
If it was. No, lots of small sheets going over. There would be two people taking it out, but usually if it was two or three sheets, one person did it, and they stood it back, and then the whoever was in charge of the room would come up with a truck and load it up, and that was taken up to the saw. All dry paper was taken up to the saw. There, it was what they called jogged, which was... basically, you know, straightened up properly.
It wasn't straight as it should be.
That's right, yeah.
So right now we've got a pile of papers, a day's making, maybe?
Yeah.
So a big, huge pile.
Yeah. Was on a truck.
On a truck.
And they take it
And
down.
The two sheets are stuck together, because when they got dried and dry, they sort of stuck.
We stood, in my time, it was always stood to let the moisture come back in it, as they said, you know.
And how long would it stand?
Depends. I mean, rush jobs are about a month, you know.
That's a rush job is a month?
Yeah,
And what's not a rush job?
No, it's not a rush job.
Yeah. and that would stand in these piles, and then...
No, were they wrapped, or were they not wrapped at all?
No, left out here, open to the air.
They're on a truck,
Or on...
They take them off the truck on the frame.
On wooden frames.
They sort of had little pallets underneath them.
Yeah, that's right, even off the ground.
And,
then it would go into the side house.
Okay. So you never used the rope lines to hang things over it? Even when you were a child, you didn't see that happening?
No. I did. Mm. But that was after it was sized.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's when the size paper were...
Okay, well, I'll let you finish your story then. So can we
then it was bought through the sizing machine.
Mm-hmm. And that's not a good job, right?
The sheets were still stuck together, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
From the drying.
Yeah.
It would go through the size machine like that and made into wads. And then they would go out of the size house down to the parting saw where the ladies parted the... That's when it was split up.
Uh-huh.
Then it would go up to the loft and was hung on the ropes. There was a drying loft.
There was a flat loft with rope.
Yeah.
Later there was wooden things with slots in.
And those pins, I've seen those things.
Like little balls.
Those things are nice.
Yeah. And they hung them up there. Or there was a flat loft where they was...
On muslin sheeting?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did different kinds of paper get put in different kinds of dryers?
Yeah,
I mean, like some paper would be...
Yeah. The big elephant was usually a rough sort of sheet of paper, what they used it for, I don't know. But that was usually dried flat, in the flat loft, big flat sheets. I think some of the...
That was Hessian sheets.
Mm.
Hessian sheets, that's like...
Yeah.
Pushed the frame that the sheet was... The sheet was very cool, if you want to lay all these sheets of paper on it, push that up to the top and paint it, and then fill the next room and push that up to
the top. I think the very expensive paper for artists was dried like that.
What would be put over the ropes? What paper?
All the legal papers, split ups and all that sort of thing. It was going to be rolled. The artist didn't want their paper.
You mean some paper was shipped out rolled? Most all?
Nearly all of it, but some of the artist paper only was lightly sort of just flattened, more than no surface to it.
Oh, rolled in the roller.
Yeah. You see what I mean?
I understand now. Yeah, not shipped rolled, but rather put through the roller machine.
That's right, yeah. But that was very often. And then it came down from the lofts, and the girls did what they called jogged it, which was separated the sheets again,
mm-hmm.
and where the back was,
because
mm-hmm. that the sheets,
right, got it back there,
like that. So that had to be pushed down like that,
and
so that it would lay flat.
Right. Now that was that a hard job? That was pretty
anybody
easy.
Could do that, yeah. Separate each sheet, jog it, and put it in piles so that then it could be pressed a bit before it went to the rolls. You see, sometimes it would, the weight of the paper was enough to do it, but sometimes it still had that.
They put it in standing presses.
Yeah,
how long would it stand there before it went?
Not very long, just enough to get it down.
So the place it sat a long time was just after the dryer to really, to sort of get...
Get it back to and then they'd leave it standing for a while before they rolled it, so it would settle down. Now for the rolling, that was the finishing, that was,
Did paper ever stand for less than 6 months? I mean, could they do a rush job where they get it out in a week or two?
Not a week or two, but I've known them do a rush job for about a month. Somebody wanted a special order.
This was something I was in on.
Yeah.
We fitted a drying machine, an air dryer, all the paper was dried flat. Lister was made, I think. This was trays that went through, what was it, 360 trays in the CIA. Sort of went up along the top backwards and forwards 8 times over 60 foot. They were one the air going through it. And came
like dry. The trays like a cookie sheet?
What?
The trays look like a cookie sheet?
They were essay, I guess.
Oh, so they were trays out of cloth?
A wooden frame.
Okay,
with
got
a
it.
In bottom.
I was thinking a metal tray.
Yeah. No, this was
that hooks on the side, you know.
The chains went around carrying it, Reynolds chains.
So it worked like a Ferris wheel, kind of, bringing the train?
No, it went, they went up over the top rollers, along the machine, down that set of rollers, back along the machine, dropping on the rails each time, and like 8 turns back and forward.
And heater, there was a heater underneath or something?
Like radiators and heat exchangers with a fan blowing air through, which you could vary the speed.
And why did it? Why did it matter if it moved? Why didn't it just sort of stay still and blow the heat over it?
Well, this way you've got a continuous. You see, you put in two chains.
Oh, I see. You put them in at the top and they come out the bottom.
Well, you put them in the same level.
Now, what's the difference between? Oh, that would be, if you didn't want it. If you wanted it to have a rougher surface.
Well, this
was
air drying, like the same as a loft drying.
Yeah.
To take the place of loft drying.
For the sized sheets?
Yeah.
Sized sheets, yeah. But because when we started this machine, we could get the air temperature up to, 180 degrees in Fahrenheit in this thing. And it used to, always the drying was a bottleneck in the middle. When the boss, he got five vats going, the dry workers just said, come on weekends, or they never dry the paper.